This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor. NATO issues a very important document. It will be reflected upon for centuries. NATO 2022 strategic concept. The ambition here is to establish goals and possibilities for the NATO nations meeting in Madrid, Spain. The key detail here is that not only is Russia regarded as a foe, but also the People's Republic of China. That is fresh. However, we begin with Professor H.J. Mackinder in the same fashion we've grown accustomed to these many months and now years of dealing with the threat of the Russian Federation before the Ukraine conflict and after the Ukraine conflict. Professor, a very good evening to you. We, the heads of state and government of the NATO allies, have come together in Madrid at a critical time for our security and for our international peace and stability. Today, we endorse a new strategic concept to ensure our alliance remains fit and resourced for the future. In the body of this, Russian Federation is mentioned as a foe and adversary, and the People's Republic of China is mentioned. We begin with the Moscow point of view. This document supports what Moscow has claimed, asserted, as since the beginning of the war, that Moscow is not fighting Ukraine, which is made up of terrorists in Donbass, according to Moscow. Moscow attacked Ukraine because it anticipated that NATO was about to attack Moscow and destroy it. Existential survival was the explanation given by the Kremlin for its combat in Donbass. So, Moscow's point of view, reading this document, are they nodding their heads and saying, we told you, or are they puzzled about the aggression? Good evening to you.
Good evening, sir. I think they are in a position to feel rather good about the week that they've had. On the other hand, the deep thinkers among them will be troubled about the implications of the trend in the war, because the trend is that more and more people are lining up and linking elbows more and more firmly against Russia and also against China's aggressions. And this is not at all the outcome that Putin wanted. Remember, he wanted to create a neutral buffer zone. He's not going to have that at all. He's going to have a fortified frontier. But let's just quickly, why should Putin perhaps be feeling better today? In Luhansk and Donetsk and Donbass, the Ukrainians have withdrawn from several positions that they held with great tenacity, faced with overwhelming Russian firepower and unacceptable rates of loss. Now, this is good news for Putin if, in fact, he imputes any value to Luhansk and Donetsk. In the past, after they declared themselves independent with the aid of Soviet secret forces, they've relied on a steady flow of Russian support. The same is true for Ukraine. Neither of these pieces of Crimea. Neither of these pieces of Ukraine is really a plus for Russia. They have to pay if they're going to hold them. I think a strategist or a military specialist looking at what Russia has accomplished would say that they have done this at the price of concentrating their forces much too much. In other words, they've taken half, if not more, of all the forces they have in Ukraine. They've used them to take Severodonetsk first and then Luhansk, which the Ukrainians quickly abandoned when they realized that they were not going to be able to hold it without a siege. And this means that they are unable to react in other areas. The Russians are facing shortages of weapons. They're using all sorts of things that go back decades. And furthermore, Russian, although they bomb, they're now adopting a kind of approach of bombing, as in Odessa, and just with the goal of destruction. These, because they don't have precision-guided munitions, and their planes, their pilots prefer a standoff position, that is to fly just up to the Ukrainian border and fire something in, because they have lost, I think, Su-35s, they're losing Su-24, Su-27, some of their very best aircraft. However, Putin has discovered that he can stymie the West, at least temporarily, by refusing to play according to the script, which says negotiations are going to end this war. As he said, I thought, Mr. Putin does have a sharp tongue in his head. He said to Mr. Macron, who regularly begs for so-called negotiations so that the French will not have to worry about this, he said, I would rather play ice hockey than negotiate. I'm not sure quite how to say that, but I think it's bad news for the idea of the sort of negotiations, say, to Mr. Blinken or the Germans or others. There is this peace party in the West that is now losing traction. One last thing we should consider with Moscow is that the issue of succession to Putin is real. Now, I'm not Mr. Putin's doctor, and I don't have blood samples, but he is said to be in bad health, although who knows? But sooner or later, he's going to depart the scene, and there are really two candidates to succeed him. And one, astonishingly, is Ramzan Kadyrov, who was born in 1976, and is the son of Ahmed Kadyrov, who was the leader of the Chechen insurgency. Now, Ramzan is very, very tough Muslim. He is a lieutenant general. That's very, very high. He's a lieutenant general in the Russian army. And he rejoices in military and displays of violence and power in a way that we rarely see in history. But he has his own private army in Moscow of 3,000 people who are heavily armed. And if it should come to a succession struggle, he could get into it. The other, of course, is Mr. Shoigu, the Minister of Defense, who is from Tuva. That is to say, he's basically of Mongol ancestry. Now, these two men are considered because they have command of armed forces. My own view is that the president of Russia, if he's going to succeed, has got to be a good Russian Orthodox Christian. The Russian people, I don't think, will tolerate anything other than that, and I don't think the Russian army will tolerate anything other than that. So I would expect that if Mr. Kadyrov made a bid for power, which he might well do, or even if Mr. Shoigu did, we might actually be faced by civil war in Russia. And we have talked in the past about how if this war goes too badly, we could see the whole issue of the state structure of the late Russian Empire and the Soviet Union. That could all come into question. That, and also, of course, there's the issue of the territories to the east of Russia, the Turkic territories, Kazakhstan and so forth. And Mr. Putin has just recently visited Uzbekistan and Tajikistan.
And he was also in Turkmenistan, I believe, Professor.
I think he was in Turkmenistan. And we should look at this, because there's a lot that's going to happen in that part of the world that is just beginning to happen now.
I mentioned one detail about Vladimir Putin. Succession struggle is always the challenge for authoritarian regimes. At this point, however, do you believe he has prepared for succession, or like other authoritarians, he thinks he's going to live forever? Can you judge him?
Well, I would say that he certainly has not prepared for succession. That he of course knows that he's not going to live forever, but whether he believes that is another question. But he has not. I think back to the assassination of Mrs. Gandhi in India when her sick bodyguard unloaded his AK-37 into the prime minister. A colleague of mine was the officer of the day at the prime minister's office, and he simply made a phone call and said, look, the prime minister's been shot, and the Indians have a constitution, and there was no civil war, there were no pogroms against against the people of identical to the bodyguard against the Sikhs, and they knew exactly who was on next. Who's on next in Russia is a complete mystery. So that in that sense, he has left it so that when he's gone, no one will know what to do except to try to kill each other and secure power.
Professor H.A. Mackinder, International Relations, reflecting upon Moscow's point of view, the Kremlin's point of view, months into the Ukraine conflict, after the strategic concept document from Madrid, when NATO identified Russia as a threat to peace. We're going to turn to the next capital, Kyiv point of view, after the NATO meeting, asking for more arms, asking for more money, but at the same time challenged by the Russian forces in the east in Donbass. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.